Welcome back, Lightning Within 5 listeners. I'm your host, Jennifer Jensen. And alongside me,
Vanessa Armenta.
It is her last episode, everybody. Oh, no.
I know. I'm so sad. But the airmen that you guys are getting is hilarious. So,
yeah.
It'll be good.
So, there's a lot coming up in schedules. I know it's the end of June, but we have a lot of cool events coming up on base that I'm looking forward to. The biggest one is probably going to be the Liberty Fest, and that's our typical 4th of July celebration with fireworks, and it's usually, you know, close to the water so the kids can play in the water and try to stay cool, because July here is no bueno.
It's toasty.
Yeah. My favorite 4th of July celebration that we had was when Chef Irvine came. Are you here for that?
I don't think so. I haven't been to a Liberty Fest at all. This will be my first one.
I mean, it's really hot, but Chef Irvine came the one year and he made food. Him and his team made food for everybody and he took pictures with people and
That's
it was
amazing.
Great. Yeah, it was great. So if anybody's curious about when that is, it's going to be July 3rd from 5 to 9 p.m. and it's going to be at the Beacon Beach Marina.
We're actually doing it at the marina?
That's what the flyer says.
What?
Does that mean it's open?
I know.
Oh, now we have to go.
I'm so excited. Well, I have to go anyway. I'm taking photos, so I will be there regardless.
Just put your America attire on and yes. Embrace it.
All my red, white, and blue.
Yes. So if you want to find out more events, more information about what's going on base, go to TyndallFSS.com. And they have an entire calendar with all their awesome events that they host. June welcomed hurricane season, everybody.
Yeah, it's my least favorite season of the year.
For real. I feel like you can't make like vacation plans in Florida because of hurricane season.
Yeah, I think the first year that we were down here, I didn't know how seriously I needed to take hurricane season.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the typical like pack a box, like have candles, have a radio, have batteries and flashlights. Yeah. And then I think, I can't remember if it was, what hurricane it was.
Where it was almost to us?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And people got a little serious.
Yes. Yeah. But I remember I had a friend who was like a Florida local that was like, you don't have to worry until Waffle House closes. That's when you should
Very
panic.
True.
Once
Very
Waffle
true.
House closes,
mm-hmm.
you need to start evacuating.
100%.
Until then, you're good.
100%. If they board up their walls, then you need to
you
get
need
out
to
of
go.
No, I always stay prepared for hurricane season. Like I always have at least like 3 cases of water and I have like my little kit with all the survival stuff, life straws and batteries and a solar powered radio and dogs.
Yes.
You always have to prepare for your pets. I think people forget about those poor things.
Yes. Like, oh no, I could not. The worst is when we get hurricane warnings when my husband is TDY and I have to be mm-hmm. like, okay, evacuation plan, me, 3 dogs. How am I going to do this?
I guess I have to worry about that now, too.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I recently got a Basset Hound puppy, so another one.
We got one though. You could just, like, put her in your purse.
Yeah. She is terrified of the car, though. It's so sad. Like, she shakes and cries the whole time. It's so sad. But anyway, yes, if you're listening and you are a Florida resident, be prepared. Have your plans ready. Have your kits ready. You never know when it's coming our way, so it's better to have than have not.
Absolutely. Better to be over-prepared than under-prepared, for sure.
Yes. It sounds like we're just talking about doom and gloom, like you're leaving, like hurricanes are
there
a thing.
There are good things happening in PA, we promise.
Our guest today, pretty awesome.
Yes. We cannot wait for this one. Very furry, lots of hair.
Yep.
Lots of energy.
And we're not talking about the humans. We're talking about
the canines.
We are having Tech Sergeant Thomas and Staff Sergeant Thompson from our 325th Security Forces Squadron canine unit come on the podcast today. And we made sure that they're bringing a doggo that we can pet.
Yes, one of their dogs is retiring, so we are very excited to give it all the cuddles and all the love.
Yes.
Because normally, you're not supposed to touch them because they're working.
Yeah, we were not about to have that. Like, you cannot bring 2 fuzzy companions in our office and us not touch it. So
Right. Why even have a dog that I can't pet?
Can I pet that dog? So they're going to explain everything about, you know, what goes into becoming a canine handler and about their mission. Like, they're not just sitting in their patrol cars, everybody. Like, these guys are working day and night, and they're always TDY. We use them quite frequently. Vanessa uses them for her base tours.
Yes, they are definitely a crowd favorite for some of the high schools and stuff that we bring on base. They'll usually take them out into the yard and show them the bite suit and then show them some of the bite commands. And it's so funny to watch the kids' faces. They're like, oh my God.
Yes. And we recently did a video with our wing commander and command chief. It was for a going away video, but they got bit. And that was pretty crazy. I shot it in slow-mo on my
cell. Which was a great decision.
It was wild. The one dog, he wasn't as gung-ho to go get
chief. He's like, this guy signs the paychecks. Yeah. I'm not doing that. Exactly. I know where my food comes from.
I don't know what it was, but they brought in the big guns. They brought in Fox, and apparently Fox does not play games. Like, Fox will rip your arm off if given the chance. So that he finally got taken down, and boy, that was a sight. But poor Colonel B got taken down three times. Because we had to keep shooting until they both got taken down at the same time. So yeah, poor Colonel B got three big bites. All in the name of the Air Force.
I have asked them if I could put on that bite suit during tours. And I think one time they were almost inclined to let me. I wasn't dressed appropriately for that day. I think I had a dress on and that just wouldn't have been a good idea. But I don't know. I have like those intrusive thoughts. It's like, do it.
Yeah.
Do it. It would be fun. And then I'm like, oh yeah, but they're kind of big dogs.
And you're kind of a tiny person.
It just looks cool.
Oh my God. Colonel B had black and blue marks on his arm from
I saw that and then I was like, maybe not.
Yeah, they would probably snap your tiny arm in half.
As long as I would get to pet it afterwards, it's totally doable.
No, you cannot. Because you're still the bad guy. You can't do that.
No, it's okay. We're still friends.
We're going to go into lots of detail about all things canine. I can't wait for y'all to hear it. I think this is going to be one of the most interesting. I think maybe it's because we both love dogs, but Vanessa and I are very excited to talk to these guys and ask them all the questions. I'm sure we're going off script for this.
Yeah, I think there's a lot about the canine unit specifically that I just really don't get to hear a lot about. So it'll be kind of cool to see their missions, what they do, how they train the dogs. I know we had them come in once and do some training in our office, and it's always cool just to see those interactions.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. All right, well, we're going to keep this banter pretty short. I know it's Vanessa's last episode. Everybody's sad because everybody loves her. We've gotten raving reviews about her being co-host. Aww. So sad day, but you know, thus is Air Force. Like, I have to train a new airman and he has to get experience doing this because he's genuinely interested. So
he's great. He'll be a great asset. He's hilarious, very smart.
Yes. And he knows all the lingo, right?
Yes. Yeah. He's a little more up to speed with all the military jargon and acronyms versus myself.
Well, Vanessa, I know we'll still work together, but thank you for being my co-host. Yes. I loved every second of it.
Thank you for having me. I sincerely enjoyed it, and I promise I will stay on as an avid listener.
Yes. All right, everybody, stick around. We'll be back with the K9 team.
This episode of Lightning Within 5 is brought to you by the 325th Fighter Wing Public Affairs Shop. For all the latest news, photos, videos, and more, check out our Facebook page, Instagram, and our official website, tendo.af.mil.
Welcome back. We have four very special guests today. They come from the 325th Security Forces Squadron. Welcome to the show, fellas. Can you introduce yourselves?
Thank you for having us. I am Tech Sergeant Thomas, and I have the privilege of having the title as Military Working Dog Kennel Master for our canine section.
All right.
And I am Staff Sergeant Thompson. I am just a dog handler. And right next to me, I've got MWD Inez.
Yeah, also next to me is MWD McEnroe. He is a soon-to-be 8-year-old purebred Belgian Malinois. He's a puppy program dog, and he has spent his entire career here at Tyndall.
That's crazy. And he is about to retire, correct?
He is. He's about to retire. So his time is slowly coming to an end. He's an incredible asset. extremely loyal, loves to work, and he's been all over the world. So he is going off into retirement, and MW Inez, she as well as a puppy program dog, so she is the future of the Tyndall Canine Program.
Love that. Not out with the old and in with the new, but, correct. You know, we need a fresh start, right?
Absolutely, for sure.
And he is actually going to a loving home, correct?
He is. I am very fortunate that he's going to come home with me. I'm going to adopt him, and he'll live out the rest of his life on my couch with my other two dogs.
I love that.
We have a very special background.
Because you met him in the puppy program, right?
Yes. So on day two of canine school, I was freshly back from an Afghanistan deployment, and I'm on day two, and an instructor walked into our classroom, said, "Hey, watch this dog. I have to go to a meeting." And so for all of us in our class, we're like, "Oh my goodness, it's a little Belgian Malinois puppy." We're so excited. And so the instructor drops him off, and as she's about to walk out the door, we're like, "Hey, what's his name?" She's like, "It's McEnroe." And mind you, he's a tiny little guy. He just looks like a little nugget. Yeah. And so I have a photo of me holding him as a tiny little guy. And so she goes, does her meeting, comes back, takes him. And then I thought I would never see him again because the canine program is large.
Yeah.
We don't know, at that age, you don't know if he's going to go to the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, Marine Corps. And so I ended up graduating. I went on to another assignment for a couple of years. And then when I came here to Tyndall, of course, I got on social media. I'm trying to find out what dogs they have. And then I see a McEnroe. And I'm like, I wonder if that's the same puppy that I got to, you know, hold in canine school. And then doing a little bit more research, come to find out it was.
It's so cool.
It all kind of came full circle. I got here. And then we ended up becoming partners. We deployed together. And he's just an incredible asset. So I love him dearly.
Oh, I love that story so much. It was like destiny that you guys would put together.
It is. The fact that it all came full circle. So I've got a photo of me holding him before he even started the program. And then now, hopefully, when we do the full retirement ceremony, I'll be up there with him, and I'll be able to take kind of his last photo of him on active duty.
Oh, it's so cute. I know the cops are not supposed to be cute. I'm sorry. Sure. That's so cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, very tough.
Yes. He's very fierce, as you can tell, as he's already slowly adopting the retired life.
Just for the listeners, if you hear heavy panting, it's because the dogs are like right next to the microphones. It's totally normal.
Yes.
Sergeant Thompson, why don't you tell us, you haven't been a canine handler that long, correct?
Roughly 3 years now.
Okay.
So I started out my canine, I guess, career out at Osan Air Base, kind of volunteering, doing the prospect stuff and doing my time before I was sent out to the school. Came back to Osan after I finished out the school, and then got my first location at McConnell Air Force Base. Got my first dog there, which I was also lucky enough to work another puppy program dog. Love that. Absolutely love working puppy program dogs. They are super energetic, very patrol driven, which is really fun, and then usually very good at detection, so that's great. And then I came here after BOPN, was first put on MWD Fanny, worked multiple Secret Service missions with her off the rip, and then we got notification that we were getting her, and just worked out where we did a dog swap, and I got put on MWD Inez, and it's been a challenge, but it's been a fun time working and learning her and experiencing the differences.
We got to witness Colonel Berkthold and Chief Lucas get taken down by the dogs for a video we did. That was great.
It was fun. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Any day that has to do with dogs is already a great day, but that was just a little extra special.
That's our day almost on an everyday basis. Monday through Friday, sometimes Saturdays and Sundays. I mean, we don't really have a fully set schedule, but that's what we're doing day in and day out. We're always conducting training like that. So, and the fact that for that day we got to do it with the wing commander and the command chief as well. I mean, that just kind of, puts the icing on the cake.
I love that day so much. We'll have to put like a snippet of that video up on social so people can witness that. Okay, so Sergeant Thomas, like how, a lot of people don't know the total scope. They think like the canines are just here for like sniffing the cars at the gate or, like drugs and bombs. So can you explain a little bit more about like the bigger scope of what y'all do? Like you said, Secret Service missions.
Sure.
So you guys are going on all these TDYs and deployments.
Like
people are not understanding how often you guys do that.
Yes. So especially for this past year, the fact that it was an election year, we were extremely busy. So our number one entity that we support is the Secret Service. That's our primary number one mission. And then number two, we support deployments. And then number three is the Bayside mission. So thankfully, we've got really great leadership that is on par with staying with the Bayside mission, but also allowing us to go forth and support these outside entities and agencies that are requesting support from us. So this past year, I mean, we had, I think, a total of almost a little over 20 Secret Service missions. Right.
And there's only how many canine handlers?
So in total, we're an 8-person section, but we still have people that are deployed, and we have an allotment of 6 dogs.
Okay.
So out of the 6, there's bomb dogs and narcotic dogs. So, but the Secret Service always requests the explosive detection dogs.
Right.
So even with people that are deployed, we still do our best to make it work and support all of the entities. So we've sent people literally all over the world.
Yeah.
Once a dog team becomes validated and then certified, they're cleared to go anywhere in the world to support those entities, whether it be to the Virgin Islands, go to Paris during the Olympics.
What? Yeah. Y'all have been doing these things?
Yes. So literally sending everybody ever. So
traveling the world with dogs.
Yes. Yeah. Traveling the world with your canine companion that you've built an incredible bond and an incredible relationship with to go do your job.
I mean,
I think I'm so fortunate that I have the coolest job in the Air Force. I mean.
Well, pump the brakes, bro.
I know. Right. I mean, and I've got friends that are pilots, and I mean, it's incredible. I love seeing all that, but every day that we come to work is a brand new day that we get to experience new trials and obstacles that we have to overcome. And when you get through to a dog and you're able, cause, you know, we communicate as best as we can, but you know, they have attitudes of their own.
Yeah.
So they definitely give us some pushback, but traveling the world and supporting these outside entities and agencies is so much fun. I never envisioned myself that I'd be going to the White House or President Trump's personal residence in Mar-a-Lago, Florida for a TDY with a canine.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And you know, Sergeant Thompson's been on some really good missions this past year.
So for Christmas, I left Christmas morning. President Biden decided he wanted to take a trip, a little vacation with his family to go down to the U.S. Virgin Islands. So like I said, Christmas Day, went out to the Virgin Islands, didn't come back until New Year's Eve. Just pretty much spent the week out there. I also got lucky enough to go to the most recent Super Bowl. Was sweeping the entire stadium the night before.
Yeah.
So being able to be out there, kind of get on the field a little bit, definitely had some pretty great opportunities in the short time that I've been here at Tyndall.
That's crazy.
So what are you doing on these TDYs? Like, what is a typical, if you guys can share, or as much as you can share, what does a typical TDY look like?
Yeah, so usually there's a coordinator, somebody, whether it's an agent, whether it's a military personnel who's there. I make the entire schedule, and we're just sweeping for bombs. Like he said earlier, primarily Secret Service wants explosive detector dogs, so we're just out there making sure there's nothing dangerous for either the protectees that were there or the personnel and guests that might be also at the location.
Yeah, so like for our other recent mission with Sergeant Gentis up in Washington, D.C., there were tons of dogs all across the DOD that were tasked with that mission. So for her, you know, she was a little apprehensive. It's a national special security event, her first mission ever. And so we're giving her all of our experience and what to expect. And hey, here's some tips and tricks on what you should do or look for and whatnot. So, but I mean, you can go from sweeping a parade route to literally searching the bedroom in the hotel or the restaurant that the protectee is going to end up going to, or like he got to go to the inauguration, and you know, you might be in the Capitol building of some sort. So it's wherever your coordinator needs you or you're tasked to go and conduct your explosive detection sweeps, you're going to go and employ the dog in a gainful manner.
That's wild. You guys have more experience and more like high caliber events that you've attended than 99% of the Air Force. That's
and that's kind of the cool thing, is that it's kind of a hidden secret with us, is that most people see us, you know, we're either out at the gate or in a patrol vehicle of some sort, and they just think that it's, you know, you're just hooking up a leash to a perfectly trained dog and the dog does whatever you want, and they don't see, you know, all the work that goes on behind the scenes, or the, you know, the events that we go and work, or the outside agencies that we get to work with.
That's so crazy.
It's a blast.
We had a really cool experience recently where you guys brought one of the dogs in for training, one of the narcotics dogs.
Yes, ma'am.
So that was really cool to see how you guys train the dogs to be able to detect narcotics. But how do you do that with a bomb dog?
So we do it literally the exact same way. So the for The only difference is the variable of what the dog is searching for, whether it be narcotics or explosives. The training is still of the same manner. It's just the handler actions are a little bit different, because ultimately narcotics aren't going to potentially be, you know, right, detonated, like set off or whatnot. So with a narcotics dog team, you can kind of put your hands on stuff and move things around to do, you know, to further your search in some sense. But for an explosive dog team, you're going to be a little bit more standoffish. You're really going to allow that dog to work. But all the dogs are imprinted on their odor that they're trained on when they're at what's called DTS, which is dog training school. It's basically BMT for the dogs. So they have their version of basic training. We had ours. Mm-hmm. And once they pass dog DTS, that's when they get sent off to their bases. So so the dogs get imprinted on all their odors. They pass DTS. They come to our base. And then it's up to the kennel master trainer and the handlers to further their training. So like the training we got to do here, I came in, I planted narcotics, that, you know, they're safe narcotics, you know, because, you know, I go into a lot of locations and buildings and I'm like, yes, can we do training in this building? And I'd like to plant, you know, some of the narcotics that the dogs are trained on. And they're like, wait, what? You're bringing what into my building?
Yeah, that's and I'm exactly like, my reaction. Yeah, our lieutenant walked in and she was like, security forces is here with narcotics. And I was like, why? Yeah.
I'm like, you know, and sometimes I joke with people. I'm like, yeah, I just want to put methamphetamine, heroin, cocaine and marijuana in your building. Yeah, and they're like, whoa, what? And I'm like, no, really, I have it. So. And they're like, oh my gosh, hold on. So, but so ultimately I planted it here in the building and then I bring in the dog team and the handler and the dog. And then I literally give them their parameters and they are going to conduct a search as if it was, we had real intel that there were narcotics in the building and they're going to do their best to ultimately locate the source of the narcotics. So that way then we can push that up to our leadership and whatnot and ultimately to, make sure that narcotics aren't on the base or explosives, vice versa. If you see our handlers that are out and about, like my handler that's on the road today, she's on patrol. She's working a 12-hour shift and she has to, so she works 5 a.m. to around 5 p.m.-ish. And we have certain criteria, no matter what the weather is, you know, she's out there and we have certain criteria for, it's called utilization, basically employing the dog in a gainful manner throughout that shift. And so she's constantly doing walking patrols everywhere. So you'll see her walk into your building. Hey, I'm just doing a walkthrough or a walking patrol. You might see her in the BX, the commissary, the MPF building or whatnot. So, and usually in that time that she's out and about with that dog always is working. So if all of a sudden that dog pulls towards a certain room or a closet and that dog gives her the dog's final response, as which is an indicator for, hey, there's something here that dog's trained on, we're then going to take the appropriate actions to further investigate and make sure that the area is safe.
This is wild. This is like blowing my mind. Like, I do not give y'all enough credit. Like, I'm like, oh, they're gate guards.
Yeah.
No offense.
When it's okay, we get it all the time. Yeah. Especially as dog handlers, we get that. We're like, oh, you guys are just dog handlers. You know, the dogs. You just play with dogs all day. Which
no, I can't imagine. Like, I'm trying to train a puppy right now, and it drives me nuts. I can't imagine the amount of training that y'all have to put into not just puppies, but like continuously, you know?
Right. And that's why we always say like Mondays are kind of crazy for us because the dogs, a lot of people don't know this, but the dogs don't go home with us.
Yeah.
They stay here on Tyndall. They're assets of the fighter wing. We have an incredible $5.5 million canine facility on base.
Yeah.
So the dogs stay there. So, it's really kind of like a prison cell for them, unfortunately, as much as I hate to say that, but it really kind of is. I mean, because the dogs, they're not allowed to interact with one another. They don't play. All of our males are intact. We want them to have as much testosterone flowing as possible. So, and they'll literally try and create, they'll try and assert dominance. So a lot of times it's the female dogs that try to assert a little bit more dominance to show
Queens.
That they're big. Yeah, exactly. I'm all for it. So, and you know, Inez is one of our new little queens. So, so we don't allow them to interact with one another. So over the weekend, if somebody's, if we don't have dog handlers on shift or whatnot, they're just in, a four-walled cement.
How do they get fed?
Well, we come in and we feed them. So, and we take care of them and they're on a schedule with us. But so that's
why. Do they at least get yard time? Like if you're talking about prison,
right? Yeah. Over the weekend. No. So over the weekend, they're just there. They are in their kennels, but it's their recuperation time.
Yeah,
so, because we've worked so hard Monday through Friday that they have to have that downtime. So, yeah. But at literally the push of the door handle, all the dogs start going nuts.
Oh, they're ready
because,
to go.
Yeah, they're just fired up because they can't see the door handle. So they're like, is that my mom? Is that my dad?
Aww.
And then, you know, if it's not their mom or dad and the handler passed by their kennel, they're like, no, take me out. Let me go and play. So, and then the dogs come out and we'll take them into the obedience yard or they, you know, they end up going to work or whatnot. And they're just like, let's, you know,
so excited. Yeah, all their
cooped up energy. Literally all their cooped up energy. So, you know, Belgian Malinois are highly known for having tons of energy, being extremely intelligent.
Yeah.
And so, you know, come on a Monday, they're like, let's get after it again. So, yeah.
I wish I faced Mondays with the same enthusiasm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I require coffee or maybe an energy drink halfway through today just to kind of kickstart my week. They already come.
They're just running off of testosterone.
Yeah.
Yes. Power. Yes.
That and sheer will to get after it.
Yeah, and you kind of have to calm them down because it's just like people. You come in on a Monday, don't really remember exactly what you need to be doing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same thing with the dogs. So you kind of have to, what we do is we bring them out to the OB yard, do a couple obedience tasks just to kind of get them back in that mindset of, hey, we're here to work. We're here to do things.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, I know I do at least on the weekends, I tend to brain dump whatever I did on Thursday or Friday. So it's the same thing with her. We come in on Monday and it can be frustrating at times where we bang heads a little bit, but once we kind of get back in that motion of how we're doing things, everything tends to flow a lot smoother.
So when you guys travel, like on TDYs and deployments, are they riding in the seat next to you or are they riding in like the cargo bays?
Yeah. So for deployments, most people don't know this, but we get classified as cargo. So we don't travel the same way that other people travel for deployments.
Okay.
We have a specific route that we have to travel. And so we travel to a certain location, we get processed, we do everything, and then from there, we get palletized. So the dog...
Like you with the dog?
Yes, but we're not on an actual pallet. So we
I was just having the worst image.
I know, sorry.
Like you're
hunched up on a pallet.
Right.
Like trying to get oxygen.
Just
like
shrot down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't fly the same way as everybody else does, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So we tend to get our own pallet for deployments because we're traveling with so much gear.
That's the other question. Like, how much stuff do y'all have to take for them?
My last deployment, I think I had a total of 8 bags.
Oh, my gosh.
And these are large bags. But also in total, you know, you're talking a gun case. You're talking a dog kennel. Because I have to travel with all my gear or everything that's going to be required of me. And then I'm going with at least 2 of everything for him as the asset. Because, you know, I have a saying that they hear me say it all the time, is that I would rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
Yeah.
That's so, the method I use for packing too.
Yeah. I'm like, I will take a ton of different outfits if I'm going on vacation or whatnot. I want options. But for them, for the seriousness of what we do in deployments, you know, we could be in a, you know, really bad location or, and depending on the mission set and what's needed of us, I'm going to say, okay, no, I don't need this 30-foot leash. I'm going to need this piece of equipment or I don't want to put this harness on them due to the mission set. I'm going to need this piece. So we travel with everything. So that's why we travel with so many bags. So, but the dog stays with us the entire time that we're traveling. So we are truly the only ones that will touch them. Most of the dogs will not allow anybody else to touch them. And we like that. So, because we, you know, all of our dogs, they're patrol trained. They're trained to bite, attack, and hold or take down potential suspects and people. So we don't want port dogs or personnel from other AFSCs to try and open a kennel or whatnot because they might lose a finger or a hand of some sort. So, but that's how we travel for deployments. So we go to certain locations. We have liaisons along the way that we make contact with ultimately to get us to our end location.
But
he's traveled a lot recently, so he's got a lot of experience with TDYs.
So for the TDYs, unfortunately, they typically travel in between our legs. I think recently they came out that we can start buying an extra seat right next to us. So we have a little bit more leg room. But every TDY I've been on with a dog, the dog has been right in between my legs. So there's not much leg room for me. Luckily, we get pretty lucky with the airlines, though.
Yeah.
And they'll try to help us out. If they have an open row, if they have an extra seat, they'll give us an extra seat next to us. Or possibly even the bulkhead that just tends to come with a little bit extra room.
Right.
I've gotten pretty lucky.
They might move people potentially as well. Okay. Sometimes people are scared of dogs and they don't want to be anywhere near us. So they'll be like, oh, hey, okay, you know, we'll move you to this seat. And then we ultimately
and you're like, bye.
Yeah, I'm like, adios. Thanks. I get a little extra space and my foot isn't falling asleep, you know, as it's tucked up under another seat.
What a nightmare. I hated, like, when my son was a baby, like, I hated flying with him on my lap. I'm like, I can't get comfortable. I can't imagine a dog in between my legs.
Yeah.
Oh, what? Like, an 80-pound dog.
Yeah.
So I've gotten lucky that the past two dogs that I've really traveled with, they're very calm. As soon as that plane takes off or as soon as we sit down, they are laid up in a ball in between my legs and they sleep the entire time. Like my last dog, Fanny, when the plane would land and it's time to get off, I would have to almost drag her off the plane because she's like, I don't want to go. Like, I'm comfortable.
Yeah.
But I haven't traveled with Inez yet, so that's going to be a new experience. And kind of seeing how her energy level is here, probably not going to be as calm as my couple last ones.
Yeah. She might need some flight medication in order to, you know, calm her down a little bit. So
I have a 2-year-old rat terrier that screams when we're in the car. Like it literally sounds like a person screaming. She'll do it for like the first 10 minutes and then she calms down.
But
traveling with dogs is no joke. No.
Yeah, I would say, especially on a plane. So granted, I mean, once you're on the plane, we're very fortunate here at Tyndall that all of our dogs are great travelers and we've all traveled a ton for Secret Service missions or deployments. We're always being tasked with those. But I would say the one nice thing is that when you're in the airport, because our biggest concern always is safety.
Right,
ourselves, safety of the dogs, safety of those around us. So whenever we're traveling, the dogs are always muzzled because you just never know. There might be that 5-year-old kid that sees a puppy that wants to run up from behind you and try and grab the dog.
Excited.
Exactly. So
do you guys get that often?
Like, yes.
Oh,
yes.
No.
Yeah, can I pet that dog? You know, that, or it's, oh, my aunt has a German Shepherd that, you know, and we're like, no, oh, thank you. You know, that's wonderful. This is a Belgian Malinois. You know, so, you know, love that for you and your family. But so, but the dogs are always muzzled while we're traveling. So, but usually when people see us in the airport, they part the seas. Mm-hmm. So we usually get a clear path because they see a big Belgian Malinois that's wearing some form of a harness or a vest, is muzzled, and they're just like, oh, stay away. So they literally, I mean, McEnroe for him, I mean, he always just walked in front of me and you just see people just divide. So you're like, cool, I have to go from one side of Atlanta airport to the other, or I got to make this connection flight in Phoenix and I've got 20 minutes to get there.
No problem.
Heck
no
problem. This is easy. So it actually turns out, like, when I travel, you know, outside of work, I'm like, man, I wish I had a dog with me to get me there. So, because we also don't have to go through TSA.
Yeah.
They're federal bomb dogs. Yeah. So we don't travel the same way. We get a little bit of privilege. We go through side entrances. We sign in. We authenticate who we are. The fact that we're traveling on behalf of the Air Force and the Secret Service. So we don't have, we don't have to go through
life
of
luxury. I know. Oh my gosh. I'm like so flabbergasted that you guys get to do all these cool things. I mean, granted, you're working, but like the Virgin Islands, dude. Seriously?
I mean,
right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I was working very hard.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I was working very hard.
In your tan.
Yeah.
Maybe.
He had a beachfront, you know, balcony he walked out on.
Stepped right out of my back door balcony and about 10 more steps and I was right at the water.
Yeah.
That's
so
nuts.
I would just go out there with MWD Fanny and we would just hang out for the morning.
So you're saying you want to go back to normal security forces?
Not particularly.
Yeah. I'm trying to stay canine as long
I'm
as possible.
Pretty happy where I'm at.
My time is coming to an end. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, I volunteered to go canine. I actually got my first dog bite happened before I was even a dog handler. So,
like dog, physically hurt you or training bite?
Yes, like physically hurt me. So it was an unprovoked attack. So I wasn't even a handler yet, and I got bit by one of our MWDs. And
what was that like?
Traumatic, but it didn't deter me because I knew I wanted to stick with it. A lot of people thought I would probably never want to go back to it because ultimately I almost had my arm amputated due to it.
It was that bad?
Yeah. Well,
you've had some rough ones.
It's a long story about ultimately what happened, but President Obama was speaking at the Air Force Academy graduation, so the med group on base was closed. So after the initial bite, I had to go off base. And the off-base hospital, when they did their x-rays, they missed that part of the dog's tooth, broke off in my wrist joint. And they stitched all of my puncture wounds up. So I developed a major infection in my arm.
Oh my gosh.
So I saw military doctors that Monday and they were like, all right, you know, roll up your ABUs. So the doctors, you know, they were looking at my arm. They're like, oh my gosh, when did you eat last? And I was like, oh, I ate, you know, a little bit ago. And they were like, ugh. So they drew a bunch of Sharpie marks on my arm. They're like, come back tomorrow morning. We have to assess this. Went back the next morning. They were like, we're rushing you into emergency surgery because the infection was so severe. It was almost passing my elbow. So they were worried that the infection
from your wrist.
Yes, ma'am. From my wrist, that if it surpassed my elbow, it could have a direct line to my heart with the infection and it could kill me. So I'm literally rushed into emergency surgery. And I ended up signing a consent form, and I didn't know really kind of what all was going on. I was an A1C. I'm brand new. I mean, granted,
you're still
I was
a baby.
Yeah, I mean, I was 25 years old at that time, but
still,
I don't know the Air Force really well. So, and my dad was still active duty at the time. So, and he worked down at MacDill, and I'm literally telling the surgeon, I'm like, hey, call my dad. Like, I want him to understand this. So my dad ends up telling me, like, yeah, just sign the document, you'll be fine.
So
typical Army, you know, and so that thankfully they did the surgery, they cleaned out my arm, and I woke up and the first thing they said is, you still have your arm. And I was like, oh, thank goodness. So I went in,
like, was that ever in doubt?
So I went into the surgery not knowing if I was, because they basically said, like, if the infection is so severe while you're under, like, we might have to amputate your arm. Ultimately it all worked out. I then ended up having 2 follow-on surgeries because I got transferred to Fort Carson Army Installation in Colorado Springs. And then did physical therapy at the U.S. Olympic Training Center. And then, meanwhile, I'm not a dog handler at this time yet. I'm still just volunteering. And ultimately got cleared, got to go on a deployment, went to Afghanistan. And I applied to canine school while I was in Afghanistan because my team leader was actually the kennel master.
Yeah.
So he helped me apply. And I got home from that Afghanistan deployment on a Thursday. And I immediately went to canine school that following Monday.
That's so wild.
Yeah. After all of that, you after were like, this is the career that field for me.
Yeah, I was I want to be a dog handler. So, but
can't
I also
wait to touch a dog again.
But I really got to see the dogs employed in Afghanistan from our sister services. And then, you know, our counterparts with the British, they had dogs there in Kandahar with us. So really getting to see them. And I originally joined the Air Force for a different manner. I wanted to help people on the worst day of their life. And if I couldn't do that, then I wanted to help prevent people from having the worst day of their life. So I knew I would have a best opportunity to do that with dogs.
Yeah.
So
I think the coolest thing, like, while I was deployed, I was in Iraq. I went on a Black Hawk, and they had their canine all strapped up with the goggles and the bulletproof vest. I was like, this is so dope.
Yeah, we'd love to put them in their doggles. That's what we call them. So, you know, we can put different colored lenses in them and whatnot, so to match our lenses.
Oh my gosh.
And a lot of times it's great because people don't know where they're looking because they're darked out lenses or they're mirrored lenses. And like, is he looking at me? And I'm like, yes, he is.
Into your soul.
And meanwhile, he's probably looking right up at me. Like, yeah. Are you going to give me my toy?
Either right at you or right at your pocket.
Yeah. So, but as long as I give off that psychological deterrent, then, you know, that's what we love.
And can I just say, like, McEnroe is such a sweet dog. Like, I'm sure that they're tough when they need to be, but he's been sitting here for our listeners. He's been sitting here giving Sergeant Thompson kisses this whole time.
One of them almost ripped his arm off. They're killers.
But yes, yeah, but he's been very sitting here dangerous. This whole podcast, like, giving Sergeant Thompson kisses. I know. Like, nudging him for pets. It's the cutest thing.
I never worked him, but we have a little bond.
Yeah, he's nice. He definitely, he knows that, I think, or at least I think he knows that his time is coming to an end, so he's slowly adopting the retired life. And I think he knows that, you know, he's not being gainfully employed every day. So he's slowly mellowing out a little bit. He still has his quirks that cue him up and he's like, ooh, go time. Yeah. I can tap into it. But 90% of the time he's kind of just calm like this.
So when he retires, are you going to give him like a big fat McDonald's meal or like?
Oh, absolutely. Chick-fil-A.
They're on very, very strict diets,
They are very strict diets, which we have an incredible veterinarian support team here at Tyndall, Captain Connell and the vet tech, Sergeant Tatum here at Tyndall. Ever since Hurricane Michael came through, at first we didn't have veterinarian support. So we finally, Captain Shaver got the clinic up and running, and she was truly an incredible veterinarian. But she PCS'd to Eglin, and then we got Captain Connell. So they are the ones who regulate the dietary program for all the dogs. Mm-hmm. And you know, most people are like, oh, you know, can we send them treats and give them bones and this and that? And not going to happen. So they are highly regulated. Most people think like, oh man, you know, they must get treats all the time and stuff. And it's very strict.
Their toy is their treat.
Yeah. So they work extremely hard just for that little black or red ball. So yeah.
Do they all have like the same Kong or?
Except for one.
Yeah. All except for one. Yeah.
Fanny is probably our most docile one.
Yeah.
And she doesn't like the black and red Kongs because they tend to be a little bit harder for older dogs. So for her, when I picked her up specifically, I bought one of the pink ones and one of the blue ones because they're softer.
Oh, the ones for the babies.
Yeah. For puppies. And I mean, Sergeant Thomas can agree, when we gave her those, she was 10 times more excited to work.
It was night and day difference because just how hard the Black Kong is. And she's not OCD about that toy.
Yeah.
So when she was rewarded with it, she would get it and she'd be like, oh, this is so hard. I don't want to chew on it. Versus McEnroe or the other dogs like MWD Fox, like they just chomp and, you know, they just squeeze that thing. And it's hard. It's heavy duty. So
once. Wait, is Fox the one with the titanium teeth?
No, that's McEnroe. McEnroe has the titanium teeth. Yeah, his top teeth are titanium.
Has a grill.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know crazy.
His top canine teeth are capped with titanium.
You should show Vanessa his teeth.
Yeah. McEnroe, come here.
Oh my goodness. Okay, I take it back. He is very
vicious. Somebody call Nelly.
Yes. If Nelly wants to do a photo op, we can make it work.
Nelly
so.
And Paul Wall, please come do a photo op.
A background dancer in his.
Oh yeah, he's great at spinning, so he'll be able to do that.
So what was the reason he had to get those?
So we were actually doing a demo one day, which. A lot of people know that we do demos, and if you don't, we do demos.
Yeah.
So we were doing a demo, and he was fleeing after our subject, who was wearing the bite suit, and the subject ended up turning at the last second, but McEnroe had already launched in the air, so he's fully airborne, flying like a little fur missile, going at the subject, and he was committed to biting and apprehending the individual, but he caught the individual with kind of the side of his mouth, so his momentum, because he had so much run up space, carried him forward, so it broke his tooth. It sheared his tooth basically right in half.
Yeah.
But his tooth was still super healthy, so it was just a clean break. So thankfully our veterinarian, I'm getting in contact with the veterinarian that was up at Fort Rucker, and there was actually a specialist that was there that said, hey, yeah, I specialize in dog or animals' teeth. So, and he was able to come down and just refill the tooth and then cap it with the titanium to kind of reinforce the structure of
it. That's crazy.
So,
but he could still like bite on the bite suit with those things.
Yeah. I mean, he literally only had a stand down period about no biting for 2 weeks just to make sure the cap's fully set in place.
Right.
And then it actually, if anything, it just kind of reinforced his bite. So we have specialized suits and sleeves that actually are made out of reinforced Kevlar specifically for him. Because,
oh my God.
Yeah, it hurts.
He's gonna slice through.
Yeah, it hurts quite a bit more.
Ooh. If someone puts their hands on y'all, like, do they lose their cool and like go after them?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, we train for that.
Nice.
So they truly are our partners in our Overwatch.
Gotcha.
So
that's so cool.
Honestly, as long as nobody makes any, you know, like we say, sudden or aggressive movements, they're going to be fine. They're going to listen to us. But if they do anything crazy, they're going after that person.
Dang.
Because that's exactly what they're trained to do.
Yeah. And especially for us, because like, you know, sometimes our patrols have one or two people in a patrol vehicle. For us, it's only us and the dog.
Right.
So we rarely, rarely ever have anybody else riding with us. So due to our large jurisdiction that we have here at Tyndall, we might be out towards Mexico Beach of some sort interacting with somebody. And it's us and the dog.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of times, you know, if you're making a traffic stop or if you're going out, you know, towards Crooked Island of some sort and you have to interact with somebody, that I'm taking my dog with me. They are my partner. They're my asset as well. They are my Overwatch. So if somebody comes up and they want to get handsy and, you know, shove us and we get into a physical altercation, the dogs, we train for that, that the dogs know the difference between what an altercation is and what just a simple interaction is. So, and then, once that altercation starts, they will immediately spring into action.
That's so dope. So. I wonder if I could train my basset hound to do that.
I was literally thinking the same thing.
They might trip,
on the ears.
Yeah, might trip over their ears. It might take them a little while to get there, but, you know.
I'm coming, Mom.
Yeah. I mean, the Navy trains Jack Russell Terriers to be explicit.
Do they really?
They do, yeah. So the Navy uses, it's not too common that you see it, but they train little Jack Russell Terriers because they're smaller. They can be lowered into a submarine or in a big ship. They can get behind the engine compartments and they can be utilized literally to sniff out explosives or detection or
that's
or
wild
narcotics.
I've never they used a rat terrier in the aftermath of 9/11 to find personal effects of the victims to get to their families.
You can train any animal
kind of dog
I
can't get mine to get off the couch
Consistency is key. So find a reward that works.
Duly noted. But when you guys are training them, you're not training them with treats, are you?
No,
you just praise.
Praising the toy for the most part.
Okay.
Typically, when the dogs start their training back down at DTS, there is a little bit of food reward, and there are some times that we can revert back to that if we're trying to train something like really new.
Yeah.
But for the most part, once they transfer from the food to the Kong, that Kong is their primary reward, and that's gotcha. They'll do anything and everything for that Kong.
And a lot of that's for the detection capabilities of the dog. So we would never reward a dog when we're doing detection work, like with a bite on a sleeve or of some right. sort. So we differentiate between detection and the patrol work. The patrol work, their reward is getting to bite the individual.
Oh.
So yeah, like our MWD Fox that you guys have seen, yeah. he like that dog is built.
He lost his mind.
He loves to bite. He's the biggest sweetheart to yeah. all of us. But also, I mean, in a real world setting, like, man, he would do damage to somebody. So,
yeah. And that's the one y'all put on Chief?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, I mean, if he were to ever truly learn how strong he is, we could potentially be in a world of trouble because...
It's absurd. I mean, even when the bite suits, Fox hurts.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just yesterday caught Fox on one of our bite suits. It was one of the thinner ones, but still... Just the pressure of yeah. his bite alone kind of feels like your arm is in a hydraulic press.
Oh,
yeah.
my God.
It's just, yeah.
And over you just got to sit there and take it.
And you got to take it. And, you know, sometimes the dogs don't always out and let go when you tell them to. So we have remedial actions that we take to get the dogs to let go. But then yeah. you're like, all right. Or so, you know, my job as the kennel master or trainer is to assess what's going on. And we're like, okay, we're going to make a minor tweak here. And let's try this avenue.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right. Decoy, go hide again, and you're gonna take another bite.
Oh my gosh.
Or you know, switch arms of some sort. Yeah. Oh, by the way, we have to do this with three more dogs. So.
Oh no!
And we're gonna do this outside in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
not when only are you in pain, you're also hot and
yeah.
sweating.
Yeah. As a dog handler, you will lose weight from sweating so yeah. much while running.
I realize that I'm saying on to a lot of these things because they're cute. Yeah. They're killing machines.
I know. I know. I'm like all these really tough, cool things, and I'm like, oh, but they're doggles.
Yeah.
And they're bonding.
Yeah. We put them in their little booties. So, you know, if the ground's hot or if the asphalt's going to be real hot, you know, we don't
that's
want their
important.
Paws. Yeah, yeah. We don't want their 100%. Paws to melt. So we
not because it looks cute.
Yeah.
That's just a bonus.
There might be a company that makes little croc ones that one of our handlers has orders.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, they're so cute.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, no, you need to be tactical, you know?
You just put them in sports mode.
Yeah. But yeah,
don't get
literally.
Them in pink.
Yeah. Oh.
Do you guys take them on the boats and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. So I actually, that's if wild. I end up having to re-enlist, that's probably going to be one of the things I'm going to do is I'll probably will take two of the dogs and you know, we'll hold the American flag while the boat's at full speed in the bay.
America.
And I'm going to wear a bite suit. I'll have a dog bite each arm while, you know,
that's
whichever.
So
trying to hold your arm
yeah,
up.
Trying to hold yeah. my arm where there's a dog on each arm and I'm like committing to staying in the Air Force another
that is
yeah.
so
yeah.
extra,
but do it on
Thomas.
The but do it on the boat yep. and you know while we're full speed, you
so
know.
You're going to let PA know so we can take
oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Of course
you know.
They will.
We've got a couple boats, you know, yeah. you guys can come out and get you know, all the angles.
Hopefully it'll be a nice little stormy background, like one
oh,
of the photos
yeah.
we've got.
You know, I mean, it's like, you know, you hear of people doing crazy things for reenlistments and stuff like that. So.
We literally got something from our old LC and he was doing it in like a German castle. And I was like, that's so bougie and extra. Yours is worse. Yours is so much worse.
I had friends in my last base that literally from our like our rappel and fast roping tower, they like fast roped halfway down the tower and then like had an American flag held up as they're up by the ropes and they turned. And I'm like, wild. I'm trying to do it hanging outside of a helicopter of some sort, you know, 100 feet off the ground and just, you know, it's make it memorable. You only
is
live
this,
life once.
If you can, yep. why not?
Exactly. And that's like I have friends that are like, what? Like, how do you even do that? I'm like, you simply ask. The worst that somebody yeah. says is no. Like,
true.
I always tell these guys, and I know they get tired of hearing it, but it's not always what you know, it's who you know. Connections mm-hmm. are so mm-hmm. important. So
sadly.
It's like, you yeah. know, I wish I could do it in, you know, the back of an F-16 while some pilot is just, you know,
yeah.
ripping barrel rolls and
yeah.
I might end up, you know, repeating the oath. Like,
passing
so,
out.
Yeah. yeah. There's a pilot out there that wants to help hook me up. I'm down. I'll do it. So, but yeah, it's like you live life once. Go yeah. forth and, you know, get as much of it as you can.
Very true. I feel like this is like a competition thing. Like, who can get the most extravagant reenlistment?
Oh,
now?
Yeah.
It
there's
is.
Yes.
We should yeah. do like a Facebook contest.
Yeah. Something of the sort like
look,
that. You
y'all
know?
Bringing ideas to the table. I like that. I like that.
No, one little thing I will just highlight on real quick is the Military Working Dog Adoption Program. A lot of people don't know about that. They have an Instagram account. So that way, if you're active duty military, retired military, or retired DOD worker, you can adopt these dogs when they retire down at Lackland Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. It is an incredible program. So long story short, Like if none of us could adopt MWD McEnroe, he still is property of the US government. What we would do is we would send him back to Lackland and then he would go into the adoption program. So where then he would either spend the rest of his life at Lackland until he gets adopted, or he might only be there for a week and a family chooses to adopt him. So they are free to adopt.
And they're such good dogs.
Yeah, they have all different breeds between, you know, labs. There's because the TSA headquarters is there as well. So labs, German Shorthead Pointers, Golden Retrievers, Malinois, Dutch Shepherds, German Shepherds. There's all different breeds. So if you're ever interested or if you're in the market for...
I know, I'm sitting here, what about civilians? Air Force civilians adopted?
Right? I think your PJ husband definitely needs one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, for sure. So, I mean, it's an incredible opportunity. There are requirements that, you know, you have to fall within in order to adopt one. You have to have a backyard. They're not going to allow a dog to go into an apartment of some sort. Yeah. And then all the dogs that are available to be adopted, they've already kind of tested them with environmentals. Are they good around kids? And they'll put disclaimers like, this dog should not go to a family that has cats. This dog is great with kids. This dog is great with other animals of some sort. So there's an Instagram page out there, MWD, I think, _adoptions. And they list every time dogs are being up for adoption, or they list the success stories of 8 new dogs found their forever home. And these 2 dogs ended up going to work for law enfortment agencies or whatnot. So it's incredible.
Immediately do something.
I know. I'm like immediately follow. But then I know I'm going to be like DMing my husband, like, we can adopt this one.
Yeah. What about this one? I showed it to my dad because I have a retired dog at home already. And my dad treats him better than he treats me.
All right, everybody. That will about wrap it up for us with Security Forces K9. Vanessa, was this a good last episode?
This was the best episode by far. It's ending on a high note for sure.
All right, Sergeant Thompson, thank you so much for stopping by. We really enjoyed this one.
Thank you for having us in the dogs.
Thank you. Appreciate it.